You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Playoff time here in New York on Extra Time Radio, and I am David Goss, and out in San Francisco, Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst. Playoffs means Andrew Wiebe is traveling. He's off on the road in what Bobby Boswell called the Las Vegas of MLS in Columbus. So we know Andrew is getting himself in a little bit of trouble. But Matt, I'm glad you could join me for this one.
It's good to be here, Gasman, without our fearless leader, but yeah.
We will soldier on. Now let me ask you, this is the semifinals. This is the two conference finals. So to me, it's the best round because you're getting multiple games, but you're getting them at pretty much the highest level.
Yeah. I think the cup itself is usually pretty cagey. We saw that last year, whereas this round has produced some pretty spectacular moments. Going back, thinking, of course, the win by San Jose over LA in 2003 when they came back from a 4-goal aggregate deficit. The Fire versus Metro Stars game in 2000. Well, the whole series, really. I think the Galaxy had a great one over Colorado in 2005. We've seen some recent ones, too. I thought the LA-Seattle series last year was actually really, really good.
That's funny because I'm on the flip side. I thought it was a good series, but I thought New York, New England last year was one of the more entertaining series.
It's true. Yeah, and that was like a really hard fought and I think really well played series. And now I think the feeling in sports is often like, okay, here's a team that got close last year. Can they take the next step? Do they have better pieces in place or a better system? And that's sort of where the Red Bulls are right now. It does, even though so much has changed, it feels like so much of the core has returned that this is okay. Here's your chance to take the next step.
And no one bigger, of course, than Dax wearing that captain's armband in the middle. So this, of course, is Extra Time Radio, MLSsoccer.com, Sirius XM FC, Channel 85. Your home for all of your playoff games. This weekend, Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, Columbus hosting the New York Red Bulls in the first leg of the Eastern Conference Finals. We're going to chat with Kai Kamara. Me and Andrew had a chance to talk with him earlier in the week. We're going to get that to you in a little bit. And then in the second segment, of course, we're going to talk Portland hosting FC Dallas at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 1 on Sunday as well. And let's get into the first game, Matt. It's not complicated. There are two big games coming. That's what we're going to talk about. Columbus, New York, every game 2-1 between these teams in the regular season. We talked about earlier, coming into this, a little bit about what's going on with these teams throughout the season, but now matchup specific. I argue that this is a better matchup for New York than DC was, and they were still able to get through that series.
Oh, I feel the opposite. I think DC was a team that New York was sort of designed to cut through, because if they're going to be able to swarm central midfield and win that numbers battle, then they're going to win most of their games. With the way Columbus plays, I mean, Higuain is a true midfielder in this system, and he moves around so much, and they move the field of play around so much with these long switches from Trapp and Chani, that this is actually a team that I think can and has given New York a little bit of trouble. Now, the Red Bulls won two of the three that they played this year, but I don't think Will Trapp played in any of those games. And Ethan Finlay was consistently dangerous, and he's the exact type of player that New York hasn't been able to really account for this year, this speedy winger who can cut in and punish a team that brings the entire back line up.
Now, coming into this game, there aren't a lot of lineup questions for either team. Columbus has clearly set the way that they're going to play. They've proven what they're going to do time in and time out. It was successful, of course, in the last round. For New York, there's one question mark, but you know who's starting, and it's Ronald Zubar in place of the injured Damien Perrinel. He started the second leg against DC United. Is this a problem spot for New York going into this game?
I think it is. Straight up, Zubar is much more mistake prone than Parnell, which is obviously not a great trait for a central defender. But I think it, I think that switch, it has sort of a cascade effect on New York's ability to get into their pressure quickly, because Zubar isn't, he doesn't read the game as quickly, and he doesn't get into the spots where he needs to be. And then he also doesn't transition from defense to offense as quickly as Parnell. Parnell is a phenomenal distributor out of the back, not in the sense that he's going to ping 60-yard passes on a dime, but in the sense that his first-time accurate distribution into the feet of Dax or Felipe or Kleshtin is accurate and repeatable and relentless. And Zubar doesn't do that. He needs to pick his head up, and he takes his time, and he lets other teams get a little bit comfortable and a little bit more set up. And it's just a little bit more mechanical with the Red Bulls when he's in there. And I think that's something that Columbus is going to be very well aware of. They're going to understand that they can keep their shape a little bit better against this New York team than maybe they have in the past.
Now, I think going in favor of him is he's a physical presence, and Kai Kamara, yeah, of course, is going to give you that physical presence on the other side. He allows you to battle with him maybe a little bit more and doesn't make Miazga consistently be the one that's in that physical one-on-one battle. These two teams coming into it, Columbus had the shell shock last year in the playoffs. New York, this is a whole new team coming in. Is there anything that you were worried about coming into the playoffs that these teams alleviated with their first series win, or that you think still is an issue through these playoffs?
I honestly think that Columbus are still a little bit naive. They're still a little bit, we're going to win this our own way. And we saw that in the first leg against Montreal, when they gave up a really soft set piece goal and they gave up the turnover in their own end, which Michael Parker's, his foot was stepped on, maybe could have been called a foul, but I think other teams in that situation would have been protecting the 1-1, protecting the road draw, and not necessarily playing it out of the back like that. Columbus is still going to do that, even against New York and their high pressure. And we had an article on site yesterday by Ben the Research Bear.
I don't have the sound effect ready.
Right? you're slipping.
I know.
Showing that opposing defenders can complete a lower percentage of passes against New York than against any other team in the league. And it's like outside the margin of error. It's a standard deviation or two away from what you should expect. That is what New England did to Columbus last year. They forced those types of turnovers and they punished them. And I think that in a way is what makes this really, really interesting, because Greg Berhalter and Jesse Marsh both are, they're ideologues in their way. They know how they want to play, and they're not going to change it. There hasn't been a lot of that in MLS over the years. So it's nice to see two coaches have some success and get to this point in the season.
A clash of styles, clearly. And I think that's the most exciting part for me, is you see two teams, like you said, that have this philosophy that are going to come in. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of weaknesses across the starting 11 on both sides. Yeah. There isn't holes. So sometimes you come into playoffs and you think, okay, that weakness might cause the difference in the series. And this feels like there's going to be a great moment from someone to cause the difference, which is, I think, what we all sign up to watch.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly guys like Kleshtin and Bradley Wright Phillips, who is proving to be a pretty great playoff goal scorer in his 3 years in MLS now, have shown that. Kamara's game-winning header last week or 2 weeks ago was absolutely brilliant. I do think the one question is in that crew central midfield. Can they be less naive and move the ball a little bit quickly? And I mean, is Tony Chani 100% healthy? He came out early against the Impact, and he missed, I believe, the international date with Cameroon. And if he's less than, let's say, 85%, that is going to hurt that team.
Well, let's talk to one guy who knows exactly what's going on in the crew camp. Me and Andrew sat down with Kai Kamara earlier this week.
All right, let's bring him on now. Kai Kamara of the Columbus Crew. You know him. You might love him. You might hate him, depending on what team you root for. He scored a lot of goals this year, got a lot of points for Crew SC. Kai, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So you just knocked off the Impact. I'm assuming that you're in the process of framing a Didier Drogba jersey. I mean, he gave you his jersey after this game, right?
Yes. Actually, I asked him from the first time I met him out in Montreal that I do want his jersey, and I told him, but I'll get it when we get to Columbus. So it was an honor to really have a Drogba jersey. Not just that you know, he actually signed it for me, and we have a picture together. So I'm still a kid in a candy shop when you compare that jersey to it.
Now, what did he say when you asked for the jersey? I'm always curious about this, like the process on the field where you say, "Hey, man, I'd love to get your jersey." He says what? Then what happens?
Right, no, actually, so I'm sure there's been a few pictures or videos shown around kind of how, like, Neymar bow to Ronaldinho back in the days. That's like paying respect to, you know, someone that's a legend. And that's kind of, you know, how it goes around in Africa when you see somebody that's older than you, someone that's, you know, more respect, you know, respectful in the public eye. You do that. You bow to them. So I saw him. The first thing I did was obviously, you know, say hello, forward a bow, you know, touching his, you know, his leg, and because that's how we do it. And I respect him for everything he's done. And I was shy, but I was like, hey, I really need your jersey. He's like, yeah, definitely. So it was awesome. I was like, but not now. I'll get it when we get to Columbus, because I didn't want to have to travel with it and have everybody ask me about it.
Have you ever done this to any other player before on the field?
Yes. I've asked for a few jerseys, actually. I got Landon Donovan's jersey one year, which was really amazing, because to me, he is the best American player to ever play. So for me to have his jersey is amazing. But there's another Galaxy player that I have his jersey that I kind of cherish more than the Donovan jersey at the moment, which is Jesse Zardes, because he's my boy from high school and everything. So, yeah.
Now, Drogba's 37. You're definitely not 37, Kai, but you scored a boatload of goals this year. He had an incredible season at the same time. Let's push ahead. Can you do this when you're 37? Can you still be playing at this level? Is this like you getting tips from him? What's the deal?
Some days I feel 37, like today. No, but, I mean, he's a legend. You know, I don't want to be, you know, compared with Didier Drogba at all. I haven't played at that level that he has played. Hopefully I can still be able to, you know, run or produce for whatever team I'm playing for when I'm at that age. You know, I definitely want to keep playing until I'm even past 37. So it's just about taking care of the body and staying healthy. And hopefully I can go as far as, you know, Cafu went.
That's a serious goal right there. Now, regardless of how your body holds up, man, I'm assuming that the humanitarian stuff, that's going to continue on probably until the last days here. And Schools for Sloan just got a really nice, you know, I guess you could call it a gift, a percentage of the 2014 fines that were levied, I believe it was 2014, are going to Schools for Sloan. That's one of your charities that's very close to your heart. Can you tell us about that? And then I'm also curious, in Sierra Leone, how much do they know about your season this year? How much do they know about the playoff run? I have to imagine it was pretty big news over there.
Yes, it is. It is. Starting with the playoff run, they follow it a lot. They have broadcast a few of, you know, highlights that they're able to get their hands on to people around there. And, you know, television broadcast has been going a bit far now, obviously, with all the rights showing games in England, because whatever they can see in England, they'll be able to broadcast in Sierra Leone. So people have followed it, and they're not so used to what happens in the Golden Boot race. That's what they, you know, everybody talks about more than anything else. Or the MVP, they say, why do they have to announce it at this time when I do my few radio interviews? So it's kind of difficult to kind of explain to them how things work around here. But they've been following everything that's been going on throughout the year, and you know, I'm honored to to, you know, be representing Sierra Leone on and off the field whenever I get a chance, you know, going into the schools for Salon. I've been, you know, working with this charity for a while now, helping build schools in Sierra Leone. And, you know, it's an honor this year to say that the Players Union gave us a hefty donation through fines, money paid by most of the players. So, you know, most of the players need to keep getting fined some more so we can get some more of this money. But it's a great gesture. You know, to me, it's amazing to say, you know, just playing in the MLS, but, you know, we're part of this family. And if that's what families do for each other, this is something we can take forever, you know, throughout your career, throughout after you're done. So the school that me and Michael LaHood was involved into building in Sierra Leone, when the solar power will be added, you know, through this money that was donated from the Players Union, it's not just going to be a Michael LaHood and Kai Kamara school, but, you know, MLS and the Players Union is going to be so much into it too, that they played a great role. And not just that, even all the fundraisers we've done, you know, I was in Kansas City doing some, I was in England, when I went to England doing some, so all the fans, people out there that's, you know, give, whether it's $5 or $2 or a pound, whatever they do, they did towards, you know, us building the school. It's been really great, and we're really proud to say the school's called Education for All, that is, you know, active now in Sierra Leone, and it's running, and it's amazing. It's really one of the biggest achievements you can get as a person.
You talked a little bit about the family that is MLS. There's a special African contingent right now at Crew SC. How much maybe does that help when guys like Harrison Offal or Cedric come in? How much does that help them get involved? How special has it been to be able to live with these guys and play with these guys? And is there maybe, are they taking ideas from what you've been doing in a humanitarian sense to maybe help grow things in their own countries?
Yeah, it's really welcoming. It's really welcoming to anyone that's coming to a team and seeing what the background is from, you know, some of your teammates that you're going to be joining. Everybody obviously reached out to the community and to the public in a different way. But I'm sure, you know, Afful, especially, he's been around his national team of Ghana for a while. I watched him play in the World Cup. And I'm sure he does a lot more over there that's, you know, very silent and not in most of it's in the media. But at the same time, you know, for us to be here and having this amount of Africans around us, it's really welcoming, dude. Accepted those guys and coming in, you want to make them feel at home. You don't want anybody to come into your team and, you know, they don't feel at place. You know, they struggle to play, because I know what it feels like when people don't really feel at home. So definitely we'll welcome them well to the team, and because that's just how it goes from generation to generation. But the African, the numbers of African players in the league has really, really grown, and hopefully it just keeps growing so more of these players can keep getting the shot to playing in bigger leagues around the world.
Now, Kai, you got to give Mo Saeed a break, though. I see you on Instagram giving this guy some trouble, right? I
mean, wow. He's a Kai mini-me. He's a Kai mini-me. So I have to, you know, he's under my wings. I take him well, and I take care of him. He's my boy. I can't give him a break. You know me. I'm just always that guy. I've actually taken it easy on him. I haven't gotten any pranks or nothing like that on him. So that's enough of a break, you know?
Yeah, hey, that's something. That's something for Mo. I saw those for a while, and I was like, man, he is really getting this. Now, you mentioned coming in and being welcomed. You had this weird thing last year, and most people know about this, where you came from England and you had to sit out until the transfer window opened back up in January, so you missed the end of the season despite being in Columbus. Looking at the Crew SC this year and looking at what you saw last year watching from the box or the stands or wherever you were, did you look at this team and say, you know what, I could hit 20-plus goals on this team. I may get the chance to really show the best of my abilities. Did you see this season kind of coming based on watching last year?
Yeah, it's something I was talking to one of my mentors yesterday, Kevin Wieners. He was one of the guys that first told me that I can score 20 goals. I can score 20 plus goals in this league. And, you know, it was always something you want to do, but you don't really know how much of, you know, work you have to do to really get to that goal. And, definitely when I came here in Columbus and going through training sessions of last year, being around the strikers and being around the team and just seeing how they play. And it was definitely one of those where I said, man, I wish I was in there. When the way Waylon Francis would cross the ball, put it in the box, or the way, you know, how many crosses was coming in and chances that the strikers were getting, that's all I was wishing for, saying, I wish I was in there. And the coach, you know, Berhalter, kept telling me that I haven't played, you know, a number nine role in a while. And he's like, that's where I want you. I don't want you drifting to the sides. I don't want you doing this. I just want you in the middle. We're going to get you the ball. And I said, fine, you're going to get me the ball. I'm going to score the goals. And I got to be honest with you, it's been, you know, in a very good position this year. And, you know, no goals has been individual goals from me. It's been all, you know, a lot of work from the rest of the guys around me.
Okay, I covered you in Kansas City, and we've known each other for a while. I look at, you know, I watched the interviews this year, and we talked to you earlier this year, and I read your quotes in the press, and I see the play on the field, and it looks like, to me at least, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that this has been kind of a maturation process of you as a player and as a person, and you're a father now, and you're married, and you have all these different things that kind of make up what has become a very, very full life. Do you feel that? Do you feel like this overall maturation process kind of has you at a point where, I'm not going to say that you've peaked, but we're really seeing the best out of you?
To be honest, I have peaked. It's different. Everybody, you know, grows in a different way. And to compare this, it would say, if not just growing in America and playing high school and college soccer, you know, I say a lot of players don't go through an academy system. So it takes a while for you to understand the game. And that's kind of the position I put myself, that I came into the league, not just playing high school, playing in college. It was just a grind where, you know, I just felt like I was good enough to play there. But came into the league and still thought, yeah, you're good enough to score goals. And then you start figuring out that, you know, you have to be coached. You have to learn the basic. You have to learn formations and everything before you can actually do what you see in your head or you're thinking of. And so finally, after going through all these different teams, like you said, us being in Kansas City, things started clicking. Things that I learned from 2006 being with Ziggy in Columbus, and things that I learned from Frank Yallop in San Jose, or Dom Dwyer and John Spencer. Dominic Kinnear and John Spencer in Houston. And it's just amazing to finally see all these things like come to play, like game in and game out. It's not just saying what's happening here in Columbus, you know, with the coach, but no, it's actually a lot of things have been happening throughout my career. And finally, yes, I've gotten to that point where the things that I did not learn as a younger player and being able to apply that right away, that I'm finally able to do that at the age of, you know, 30, 31. So, and it's never too late.
You know that Dom Dwyer is now going to take credit for all your success this year, right?
Dom Dwyer, yeah. No, he might be a really, really great coach someday, but he's not going to be coaching Kai Kamara. Definitely not.
He was not close to the Golden Boot this year after a great season last year. You came up just short, and I know there was some frustration about that call that held you out. Do you still think about that? Do you still think about the Golden Boot? How long will this be something that kind of sticks in your craw?
Yeah, I would think about that. I will always think about that. Guys, come on. You cannot put that. You can't put that behind you. I mean, I do when I'm saying I have a bigger goal in mind, which is definitely lifting up an MLS Cup, because that's one thing I haven't gotten yet. But no matter what it is, no matter how long I play this game for, there's always going to be that one time. You know, I say I win the Golden Boot next year, or the year after that, or 3 years in a row, I will still think about this year that I came close to winning the Golden Boot. Hey. Stuff happens, you have to move on, and that's what happened. But again, that's just something I'm never gonna forget.
Hey, you're still alive for the MLS Cup, man. Jovinko, he's not alive for that. You said Sierra Leone, the folks on radio shows are asking you about it. What are they saying back there? Was it like Kai Kamara gets robbed all up in the lights on the headlines?
Everything. They're saying everything. They're saying, how is that possible? Why wouldn't you play the last game and all this and the wait? So if you have 22 together, so, and you did not score any penalties, I'm not, you know, saying that I just missed one a couple weeks ago. Don't worry about that. But saying you did not score any, what happened? Don't you get it? And I was like, no. So is it two winners? I said, no. Obviously, if you get more assists, then you get it because you have more points. So it's a little bit, you know, more of when I get to Sierra Leone later on in December, which I'm planning to visit, knowing that the country is Ebola free now, which is amazing. So I'll plan to visit, see my family after the season is done in December. And then I'll be able to actually explain to everybody how everything happened this year.
Now, your hope is that the season won't be over until you're able to lift MLS Cup. in the beginning of December. You were in Kansas City. You had a great run there, but then you leave. You go over to England right as they win MLS Cup. You obviously were watching that, and of course you're happy, but does this feel like that second chance that you just missed out and now's your opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I was part of the Kansas City team for a while. I think I scored about, I came back from England and being involved with the team, scored about 8 goals and played a decent amount of minutes, you know, to help the team go into the playoffs, which, you know, I'm still waiting for my ring. I don't know, maybe the mailman lost it. But
hey, that mailman's finally, got a nice gift there.
Oh, Andrew, do you have it? Do you have
it? No, definitely. I don't have it. Don't come checking around. Definitely not me. Did not put that on eBay. Wasn't me.
So yeah, no, but it's a good time now. It's a really good time. I'm happy I made this decision coming here. Things have been really, really good. And you know, I've been in this position before, obviously in Kansas City playing against Houston, and now here we are. We're playing in the final against the best team in the league against New York. So it's really about the focus. You know, there's not many games left. There's only a few games left, but it's game at a time. Can we be, you know, more focused into taking care of one game at a time that can get you closer to the MLS Cup and playing in the MLS Cup?
3 matches against New York Red Bulls this year, Kai. Somehow you didn't score a goal, and you basically scored against everybody, it seemed like, this year. It kind of feels like you owe them one. I have to imagine you feel somewhat the same.
You're not the first to remind me that I haven't scored against New York today, and I'm aware of that. And to me, it's really the focus of the team right now. Yes, I've scored numbers of goals this year, and I would love to score against New York, saying I've scored on a lot of the teams this year. But if we can get 3 points from it and me not scoring a goal, and I'm completely okay with that. And really, it's about the focus. You know, New York has done really, really good this year. Them winning the Supporters' Shield, and you know, that all explains on how well they did and how well, you know, the defense played. So again, our focus just got to be about playing our game. And if I don't score, there's 3 or 4 of the guys on my team that can score goals.
Certainly a team with a lot of different weapons. Ethan Finley's been a guy that's been there with you all year. The guy you're liable to match up with Damian Parnell out, but perhaps even more, even with him in, you would have, is Matt Biazga, a guy who's got a lot of great press this year, got called into the U.S. national team, got capped for the U.S. national team. What's your scouting report on that young guy? And then I also saw an Instagram post from Baki Sumare, maybe, or maybe it was from you, talking about the battles you guys had. I assume you and Matt will battle, but I wonder who's the guy that you really, throughout your years in MLS, thought you had the very, very best physical battles with.
No, yeah. Miazga is a good young player. And the last time we played him here in Columbus, actually, I think it was a good battle. You know, he's a big guy. I'm a big guy. And he's going to challenge. He wants to go in for a lot of stuff. And I respect that. But again, at the same time, I'm a different player compared to these guys. He can do well. He can win some maybe 1 or 2 air balls, but I'm not basically winning more than 70% of the air balls against, you know, him. So it's going to be a good game, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm sure he's up for the challenge. And again, it's not going to be easy. I won't take it easy on anyone. I'm here to win something. And I'm sure he wants to win something, but you know, the bite and the fight from me will be definitely more.
Now, Baki Sumare, is he the best guy or the most physical guy you went up against? Who's the guy in MLS you think back on? You're like, ooh.
No, I can't say Baki Sumare is the best defender I've gone against, but definitely one of the most physical defender I've gone against. you know, knowing him for years coming into the league, you know, we're good friends. We talked and all the time before games, after games, and it was always tough. And you always said I never scored on him. I actually scored maybe just 1 goal in Chicago when he finally came back to the league. And I was like, well, there you go. I finally scored a goal now that I'm playing against you. But there's been really, really good defenders, and it's always been a battle, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed going against recently Aurelien Collin, you know, knowing the fact that I played with him and for years playing with Collin. I said, I really want to play against this guy, and I can't wait, you know, if this will ever happen. When it actually did happen, you know, I enjoyed it. And so there's been numbers of guys I played against, and I've really enjoyed it.
Now, one of the things that's happened recently for you is that a sports science special came out on you. Were you surprised at all about how athletic you are?
Yes. Yeah. No, actually, I said, yeah, I was surprised that I was on the show because this is a show I've followed for many years, and I've always wanted to be on that show. I remember seeing Preston Burpo, a goalkeeper for Chivas, obviously used to be on, went on the show, and all these things were going, and somebody else did a bicycle kick on the show, and I was like, man, I'm one of the athletic guys in the league. I definitely would love to go on the show. So it was amazing yesterday. I saw it on Snapchat. One of my friends had a Snapchat. I was like, wait, that's me on Sports Science? He's like, yeah, it's air. And so I was looking at it. I've actually watched it maybe like 3 or 4 times already. It's amazing to finally see these things put into science, seeing what you do. And for me, I'm impressed to see myself on there. I'm amazed. And but no, I do. I check myself whenever I'm jumping for a ball, whenever I'm sprinting for something. I really do check myself and see how I'm moving my body and my timing. If I do it right, then I know I can, you know, I can do something about it. But it's good to see that only a split, you know, for a few seconds, if you do something wrong, this, something else can happen. So it was amazing to finally be at that show.
Now, you said when you watched it, you should be on it. You're one of the best athletes. Are you the best overall athlete in MLS, though?
I won't say I am the best athlete overall. There's other guys that, you know, do some of the athletic stuff.
Who's on that list?
That I probably will be there. Andrew Farrell. I don't know what kind of athleticism he does have, and he throws himself sometimes in a way where I don't even think he's playing soccer. You know, it looks like some karate soccer that he does sometimes. but, no, I definitely, I mean, when it comes to, I don't know, speed or agility, sprint, or getting up in the air, then, you know, obviously I'm the best in the air in the league, that I know, but moving my body in a different way, there's definitely some other guys that move, you know, like freaks.
We'll let you get out of here after this last question, Kai, because I've always wondered this, and you just said it, you're the best in the air in MLS. I will sign on with that 100%, but I know that you played volleyball and I think basketball maybe in high school. I've always wanted to know, though, what the top dunk you've ever been able to pull off was. Do you have like a 360 in the repertoire?
Yeah, I'm a volleyball player. I'm more of a volleyball player than a soccer player. Can you believe that?
I can, man.
But I wasn't able to play basketball. I wanted to play basketball in high school, but then we had Darrell Wright and we had Russell Westbrook, so they didn't need my help at all because that was the same season at soccer. But I can do the reverse dunk. I can do off the backboard. I tried the 360, but obviously I have to bring the rim down a little bit. I haven't really challenged myself that much when it comes to dunking the ball.
Well, there you go. You just got to get your head above the ball in soccer. He's been doing plenty of that with Columbus Crew SC. They will take on the Red Bulls at Matt Free Stadium on Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. Kai Kamara at Kai Kamara on Twitter. Kai, good luck, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
No doubt.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
David Goss back here on Extra Time Radio alongside Matt Doyle. I got in an odd debate last night that started with whether Kanye West was the voice of his generation. There was comments about the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, and it ended up on Jozy Altidore, and I have no idea how it got from one point to the other. But you can imagine the nerdy group of people, of MLS nerds that I was around.
Let me ask you, have you had a chance to talk to Thomas Rongen about his Rolling Stones stories?
I have not.
Well, just to set the scene a little bit, I'm not going to tell the story. It's Thomas's to tell, but Rongen was in the old NASL in the late 70s when Club 54 or Studio 54 was happening. And of course, he was very good friends with Johan Cruyff and Beckenbauer. And when they would roll through New York, they would end up going to Studio 54 to, you know, do what people did back then. And a couple of those times included riding there in the limo with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and the Rolling Stones. And that's where I'm going to leave the story.
How is there more to the story than that? How many more? How much more
can there
be? Use
your imagination, Gasman.
Oh, my God. Okay, back here, Extra Time Radio, MLSsoccer.com, Sirius XM FC Channel 85. That's your site for all of the games this weekend. Portland versus FC Dallas, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Fox Sports 1, Fox Deportes, TSN 2, and Sirius XM FC Channel 85. And Doyle, going into this one, FC Dallas, the favorites, not overwhelmingly, but there's not a lot of formation lineup talk between these four teams coming into this. The big key or the big question mark for me is, how can you not start a Blas Perez or a Tesho Akindele, but mainly I think Blas Perez, at center forward for FC Dallas?
Here's how you cannot start him. This is a tweet from Daniel Robertson, who works for FC Dallas. Your crazy stat of the day: Dallas allowed just 7 goals in the 1,402 minutes David Teixeira played this season. Center forward, is your main job is to score goals. But we all know in modern soccer, everybody's hybridized to a certain extent, and defense starts from the front. And FC Dallas going on the road, they want a point. They don't care if it's 0-0. They don't care if it's 1-1. They want a point. And putting out a center forward who's going to, you know, work his tail off defensively for however long he's out there is probably the right idea. You save Blas Perez either for the last 15 minutes or for leg two.
Now, okay, if it's a home away thing, I can understand you want to manage the away leg before you come home. But you can't risk needing to score in the last 15 minutes of the second leg two series in a row and get a Walker Zimmerman super moment, right? So let's look at this from FC Dallas' point of view, then we'll look at it from Portland. How do they manage this series now? How do you feel they managed the last series?
I think they did what they had to in that second leg. And I mean, honestly, I think they could have brought a couple of the subs on a little bit earlier so that it didn't come down to the last 10 minutes of the game. But if you look at the way they played, I thought all the pieces were mostly in place. You know, they dominated the Sounders in that second leg in terms of possession, and they turned them into chances by and large. And Seattle's not some scrub team. They had a good defense this season. And then Dallas gets a lot of praise for their technique and their speed and the little bit of flair that they play with. But they're a devastating team on set pieces. They are an absolutely devastating team, and I think they know that if it comes down to it, the last 15 minutes of this series, they will be able to bring on Walker Zimmerman or Blas Perez and put them in the box with Matt Hedges and the other targets that they have up there and bend in a couple of corner kicks or a couple of free kicks for Mauro Diaz. It's not the most aesthetically pleasing type of approach, but it works. Just ask Seattle.
And we saw for Portland in the first playoff game, Kevin Ellis, of course, getting the goal off a set piece to tie it late. Coming into this matchup, which team do you think this is a better matchup for FC Dallas now or for Portland? Portland, I think this is a similar look to what they had in Vancouver in that they have that speed, the physicality on the back line. But the difference, of course, is Mauro Diaz, who's probably the best player on the field.
Yeah, I think the first goal that Dallas scored at Seattle in their 2-1 loss, so the only goal they scored, in which Castillo was able to punish Tyrone Mears overlapping and Diaz was able to pick him out on the run, that's the goal that would scare me if I was Portland. Obviously, Elvis Powell is one of the most athletically gifted fullbacks in the league, but he still picks really weird times to go on the overlap, and he's not as secure with the ball as you want. So I would be worried about him pushing up, losing possession, and leaving these acres for Castillo to run into. And I mean, spoiler alert, but Nat Borchers is not going to keep up with Fabian Castillo in a foot race. that particular aspect of it is a good matchup for FC Dallas. However, Diego Chara playing as a D-mid will require Mauro Diaz to put in a ton of defensive work. And that is a good matchup for Portland because you can't let Chara sit there and ping balls around and control the tempo and rhythm of the game. Diaz is going to have to be a two-way player in this one.
Now, the idea of Nat Borchers in a foot race for Fabian Castillo just made everyone in Portland terrified. Portland gets a 0-0 tie against Vancouver. They go on the road. They're able to get the win. Is that what they need to do? Do they need to keep Dallas off the score sheet? Do they need to have a lead going into the second leg in this matchup?
You know, Portland actually plays pretty well at Dallas historically, so I don't think they're going to feel all that much pressure. Obviously, you want to win and you want to keep the zero. I think that the way they would look at it is that keeping the shutout is the most important thing. If they're able to get a goal or two goals on top of that, then hey, that's awesome. But I don't think Portland's going to be too intimidated by the thought of going to FC Dallas. It's honestly not an intimidating atmosphere there. And again, if you look at their history in that stadium, they haven't done too badly.
It may not be intimidating. It was electric at the end of that second leg against Seattle. Now, I have a question. Scientifically, if Darlington Nagbe comes into this game and raises his game to another level post-U.S. cap, potentially scores, does the U.S. soccer fear implode like black matter in a star, or does it just burn out completely? I mean, if this guy takes his game to another level in this conference finals after his first cap, I have a feeling U.S. soccer fans are kind of going to go insane.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody's waiting for a little bit, but... you know, I thought he's been phenomenal the last 6 weeks. And I thought when he came on against Trinidad and Tobago, he settled the U.S. down. And I think we were being outshot 14-7 before he came on. And afterwards, we outshot them 4-5-1. So it just shows you don't always have to add a pure attacker to become a better attacking team. And I think that's what Portland are counting on and have sort of reaped the rewards of since moving him to central midfield. But it's also worth remembering that one of Nagbe's great individual goals came at Toyota Park a couple of years ago in the Open Cup, where he just he blew up the right side of the FC Dallas defense, to borrow Jonathan Yardley's call of that goal. He's probably individually the most talented player in the league. And the fact that he's finally playing like it, I think it has people in a tizzy.
I hope Mauro Diaz has a huge game and rips off his shirt and goes, "What do you think about this, Matt Doyle, most talented player in the league?" So
there's an interesting, actually, a comparison between these two guys. Everybody understands that Nagbe is this incredible talent. And one of the ways they sort of illustrate that is by using his numbers of dribbles attempted and completed. A guy like Fabian Castillo, who led the league in dribbles attempted, completed them at a 43% clip. Nagbe completed them at like a 63% clip. Now, he didn't do it as often,
right?
And it's not his go-to. He doesn't automatically look for the take-on, but he's so good at choosing those moments and just skinning people. However, Mauro Diaz actually completes dribbles at a higher rate. Doesn't do them quite as often as Nagbe, but it's not like he does it infrequently. 3 or 4 times a game, you will see him take guys on and absolutely leave them for dead and then just pick out a seeing eye pass. So, I mean, these are two of, if you want to go 25 and under, these are probably the two most exciting players in the league.
I think it was exciting to see for a young team that with a lot of creative players, and we talk about their flair, not panicking late in the Seattle game, continuing to play their style, continuing to try and do the things that have made them successful and eventually getting that win. Let's talk predictions here, though. Coming into this one, do you think Caleb Porter changes anything? Do you think he lines up exactly as he's lined up with the same philosophy of let's keep it tight at the back? We know we have talent individually and potentially to score. And then what do you think happens in this one?
I don't think he changes much. The only thing I could see happening is Asprilla starting for Milano again, but conversely, maybe because you're at home, you put Milano in there because he is a better attacking player. But that's the only one that I think is up in the air. I don't think they're going to sit on this. I don't think that they're going to play for the dour sort of scoreless draw. They do want to keep the zero. And honestly, a scoreless draw is fine for both teams. But I don't think this is going to be sort of a tentative hold everything back type of game.
You have a prediction, or do you not even want to go there?
I haven't thought about it enough yet. I don't want to go there, Gasman.
Nice.
Do you have a prediction?
I could have, but now that you don't have one, I guess I don't have one.
You can get my prediction tomorrow when we do pick 'em. That'll be
he makes them wait. He makes the people wait. MLSsoccer.com is the site for Matt Doyle's potential picks. Now, coming into the playoffs, I was going to ask you if you were worried that Jesse Gonzalez is a young goalkeeper for a team going to the playoffs. That's clearly not an issue. So there's no reason to bring that one up. So for FC Dallas, is there a weakness? I mean, is there an area that you're worried about?
Well, I still see some issues with Gonzalez. His distribution is not great, and he can dawdle on the ball, which I could see Rodney Wallace giving him some trouble and sort of baiting him into some loose distribution toward that Dallas right side. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. And also, like, Portland doesn't cross the ball a ton, but when they do, they tend to be deep crosses, like from the fullbacks, especially Viafania up the left-hand side. Gonzalez doesn't get a great read and a great jump on those types of balls. So he can allow – he'll either come off too far and not quite flub it, but it looks at times like he's going to make a mess of it, or he'll stay nailed to his line and give a guy like Fernando Adi a chance to maybe bring the ball down and create something. Where Gonzalez excels is shot stopping. He just covers so much of the box. And that's kind of bad news for Portland because they're not remotely a clinical finishing team.
Coming into this one, I think for both matchups, I think the biggest surprise would be if one team really walks out with a big victory. These teams just seem so close together. You can't imagine either series being potentially decided before that second leg. I don't even know why I'm asking, but do you have a prediction for Columbus, New York?
I predict that you can read my prediction tomorrow in Pick'em.
Boom. That's where it is. Okay, 5 p.m. Eastern time, ESPN, Columbus, New York Red Bulls. 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, Portland FC Dallas, Fox Sports 1, Fox Deportes, TSN 2, Sirius XM FC, Channel 85 for both of them. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little U.S. national team, a little Seattle Sounders, and maybe some Chicago Fire.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Yeah. And you say Shy City.
Back here on Extra Time Radio and playing Kanye West. Some would say playing the voice of their generation. I don't know if that's true or what generation that stands for. But Matt was able to convince me to play it, and I did because...
That's your generation, guess, man.
You talking about my generation? Is that what's happening right now? Let's go into a little bit of MLS news outside of the four teams we already discussed. Chicago Fire announcing that they will not be bringing back Brian Bliss. A little bit of a house cleaning. New GM, of course, in Nelson Rodriguez. And you got to say, we saw something similar with Ali Curtis last year. Now, of course, that Red Bulls team was coming off an Eastern Conference Finals appearance. This Chicago Fire team, not so much. We do not know who the coach will be yet. There's a few names out there. It's the same names that we've been discussing. One coach we do know that will be in place next year is Ziggy Schmidt in Seattle. He will be staying after, I guess some people would say, a disappointing season. That was the only reason there was question marks, although Garth Lagerwey said it wasn't really a decision. He did say that the core of their team at the age that they're at and with the quality they have will have one more year with what he described as a different periphery talent, maybe more roster depth, getting a little bit younger. But Doyle, it's not going to be a giant shakeup in terms of talent and the spine at that Seattle team.
Well, I think the only chance of shaking it up is getting rid of Ozzie Alonso, and there are multiple reports that he's on the trading block. But he seems to be the only one of that core group who is on the way out.
And we've heard that the term that Ziggy said was, we're not shopping him, but we are taking calls. So they're not actively looking, but they are open to the conversation. And then, of course, rumors, or Garth Lagerwey actually confirming that they gave a huge offer to Jordan Morris to potentially be a homegrown player for them. Is that a game-changing move for them? I mean, is this, he's a U.S. national team player. Is he a guy that can turn it around? Or is he the guy that could take them over the edge?
Oh, what they need is speed. This team just didn't scare anybody and weren't able to get behind anybody. And Morris adds that, but he's still just a college kid, and you don't want to say, oh, this college kid is going to come in and you know, put this team over the top. That's too much pressure on him, and it's not really a fair expectation to have out there. However, I think he'll help. I definitely think he'll help. I think they need to get a little more speed in wide midfield as well, and they need to get somebody in central midfield who can create a little bit. And of course, they also need fullback depth. They have some work to do.
Yeah, it's a lot of pieces, but it seems like the core clearly is going to be there from Stephen Fry up to Martins and Dempsey. Jordan Morris, he's playing in college. What a perfect transition there, Matt Doyle. The College Cup beginning this afternoon, actually. Yesterday, if you're listening on Sirius XMFC channel 85, but it's a few weeks of college soccer. Is there anything for you, Matt, that for people out there who might want to tune in but don't know where to watch, that they should pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, you just got to search around for streams. Most of these games, maybe even all of them, are streamed live on one platform or another. I know ESPN3 is carrying a couple of them. If there's a team that you want to focus on, and you're trying to project who's going to be playing in MLS over the next couple of years, it's probably UCLA. They have a ton of talent. They have the guy who I think will be the number two pick this year, Abu Dunlady, who's probably he's definitely going to get a Generation Adidas offer. I don't know whether or not he's going to take it, but he probably should. They have a kid, Jackson Ewell. I'm maybe not saying that name correctly, but he's a product of the Minnesota Thunder Academy, and he's a freshman midfielder. So it'll be interesting to see how that's handled, because there are MLS teams who would like to have him. However, Minnesota's going to be in the league in the next, 15 months? So whether he goes back, or I'm not sure how they want to play this. And there are, if you go down that list, there's a Sounders homegrown kid banging in goals. There's a couple of seniors. There's a freshman right back. UCLA is the team to focus on. Beyond them, probably Georgetown. Their central defender, Josh Yarrow, will probably be the number one pick. He would have been the number one pick last year. Now, there are some scouts who are suddenly picking out holes in Yarrow's game. And I know a couple teams that don't rate him that highly, but I think they might just be talking a little bit. I think he's probably still the consensus number one. And if you want to find a sleeper, it's actually Yarrow's central defender teammate, Cole Seiler. Been a 4-year starter. Big, strong, not super fast, but pretty good on the ball and distributes well. Type of guy who you draft him, you stash him in USL for a year or two, and hopefully by the time he's 23 or 24, you have a guy who could play significant MLS minutes.
Since we're already going deep cut on Georgetown men's soccer, Keegan Rosenberry, also a very entertaining player that might have a future. Now,
overlapping right back. Yeah, I think he's the one. He is probably going to be the first fullback off the board if teams feel that he can defend, because the questions about him mirror the questions about Taylor Kemp a couple years ago. You know, he could create. You know, he's good on the ball, but does he have the speed and quickness to do it at an MLS level?
Now, currently, as we are recording here on Thursday afternoon, UConn and BU locked in at 1-1 in the 57th minute.
Doyle, I did have not you know been, that.
Oh, I didn't even. I was like assuming. I just I saw know, it I, and I was knew, like, "Well,
I
Doyle's
we were down." I checked it 5 minutes ago, and we were down.
Oh, so congratulations! Then,
yeah, I'm pretty happy.
For everyone listening, you now know the results. So either right, go
right,
on.
Now I have to give you. Now I have to give you the UConn scouting report. Okay.
Wow! What a coincidence. Time restraints. And for anyone out there who knows the score, either go on Twitter and troll Matt Doyle, or you can potentially go on and congratulate him. But I don't think you'd want to waste your time doing that. One other piece of news coming out, Copa America Centenario coming to the U.S. next summer. Go to MLSsoccer.com to see the host sites that have been named across the country and figure out where you're going to be when you want to go to those games, because it's going to be an exciting tournament. And then let's jump into the mailbag for one quick email. We haven't talked World Cup qualifying yet. We just don't have time with all the playoffs going on. But James Chelminski is going to get his in, and he goes, "Guys, I can't follow how everyone's asking for Jurgen Klinsmann to be fired off a 0-0 draw with TNT. He says he's not the biggest Jurgen fan, but he thought the draw was a fair result and by no means a bad one. In qualifying for Brazil 2014, in the first round for the U.S. got 4 points, a zero goal difference on the road, 9 points, and then a plus five goal differential in the hex. 7 points, negative one goal differential on the road, 15 points, plus goal differential," I'm assuming he's saying there, "at home. Clearly getting points on the road is tough, so any point gained on the road is a good thing. In 2012, we lost 2-1 in Kingston, Jamaica. So if anything, from a results perspective, this 0-0 was an improvement." Matt, quick reaction?
The game didn't happen in a vacuum. The U.S. are no wins, 4 losses, 2 draws in our last 6 games against CONCACAF opponents who are ranked in the top 100. The only teams we've beaten recently are St. Vincent and the Grenadines in Cuba, who are just awful, awful teams. In our last 11 games, we have been outshot 10 times, including this past Tuesday in Port of Spain. And while being outshot isn't everything, if you look at the analytics, we have lost the expected goals battle in 10 of those 11 games.
Now, real quick, is there anything that you took positively from this game?
The presence of Nagby. I thought he settled down the midfield and did pretty well with that. And I thought Jose Altidore was a lot better than... I mean, people hate Jose, and I get it, because he's not as good as he should be, given all his gifts. But he was really good in that game. And I thought he was obviously really good against St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And I thought if you go back and watch that Mexico game, for the first 65 minutes, Josie was really good. He was the only guy who was holding up the ball and creating a little bit, and he kind of had to do it on his own in that one. So I think Josie's playing well. I think Nagby adds some hope. I wrote a whole thing on it.
Canada gets a 0-0 draw away at El Salvador. They're on 4 points.
I think that one really hurts them. Because now Canada's not going to beat Mexico or get points out of Mexico on the road. And they're very likely not going to get points out of Honduras on the road. I mean, we all remember what happened the last time they went to Honduras needing
a
reversal.
Man, I feel so bad for Canada fans that everyone gets, because I've been in favor of them over the last week. And every time I say it, everyone goes, "Yeah, what happens to Canada when they go on the road to Honduras?"
Exactly. And it puts them in a position now where you have to probably beat Mexico at home. You obviously have to take care of business against El Salvador at home. And then you have to hope that El Salvador gets it done at home against Honduras. And that El Salvador team is not good enough to rely upon in that situation. So I think it's not a terrible result. But you can't leave points on the table like that. You just can't.
So Matt Doyle saying a guaranteed Canada going to the 2018 World Cup. Mexico gets a huge result down in Honduras. A big game as well in Panama City between Panama and Costa Rica. Check out all of that in World Cup qualifying. But we're back now. MLS playoffs. This is what we've waited for all season. It's going to be two phenomenal games. And we're going to be back here on Monday on MLSsoccer.com on Tuesday on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 with the breakdown of all of your first leg action, as well as starting to look at that all-precious second leg. Mac, thanks so much for joining me. Don't forget to follow Andrew Wiebe out in Columbus for all of your news. MLSsoccer.com for all your playoff coverage. For everyone here at MLS, I'm David Goss. Enjoy the playoffs.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.